Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At a forum for art and literature in China in October, General Secretary Xi Jinping gave special praise to a blogger for spreading positive energy. The blogger, Zhou Xiaoping, is known for his nationalism, but also for his strong rebukes of America and American culture. He calls the U.S. selfish, uneducated, corrupt, and the Chinese government is urging the Chinese people to follow him online. This hour on Point, China's new media darling and the message to the West. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the message coming out of China? Is the U.S. vulnerable to this kind of critique? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first from Beijing is Ian Johnson, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent who writes for The New York Times, The New York Review of Books, and The New Yorker. He is author of Wild Grass, Three Stories of Change in Modern China. Ian Johnson, so nice to have you with us.
Hi, Jane. It's great to be here.
Well, explain the circumstances here first where China's General Secretary Xi Jinping praised this very popular Chinese blogger named Zhou Xiaoping.
Well, I think the background is that Xi and the party overall, they're trying to regain the ideological high ground. They're trying to be relevant in this debate over what Chinese people should believe, what kind of moral values they should have. And so Xi was talking about culture and the arts, and he was praising people like Hemingway and people who had a moral message in their works of art. And I think they were also then, at this point, then trying to appeal to the 20 or 30-something-year-olds by bringing in this blogger. And so he mentions Zhou Xiaoping and sort of says he should also keep doing what he does and keep spreading the word. And, you know, who knows whether Xi Jinping has really read this guy, but he's now part of this overall campaign that the party has to influence people's ideas.
So it's part of a larger campaign. I mean, it's not every day that the leader of Communist China gives a shout out to a blogger. Let's be honest. What is it that this blogger wrote or did that put him in the spotlight, that brought him such unusual recognition?
Well, we don't know exactly, of course, what Xi was thinking or even if he'd read Zhou's works, but clearly the speechwriters or the people in Xi Jinping's office felt that Zhou represented the kind of person who stands up for China, who's proud to be Chinese, who doesn't want to feel inferior anymore. It's the kind of feeling one gets in China's foreign policy nowadays also, where China's more assertive on the international stage. And I think they're just trying to push this kind of an idea that, you know, hey, it's okay, we don't need to apologize, we're not second best anymore, our system is no worse than anybody else's.
But isn't it more than just campaigning, standing up for China? Isn't it an anti-American sentiment? He calls the U.S. selfish, uneducated, that more than half the kids in public schools in this country don't graduate, you know, that every American has to pay a mandatory car insurance fee of $3,500 a year, the White House is, you know, I mean, there are lots of specific things that this blogger has said that have really made inroads, right, in the Chinese online sphere?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There are people like Zhou who are very popular for saying, hey, our society might not be perfect, but the United States is just as bad, and who point out flaws in the United States. And as you pointed out in that list of things, some of them are not exactly accurate. He criticizes the Western media for being unfair toward China, but he himself is not exactly sticking to the facts, and he'll throw out all kinds of critiques and criticisms sort of offhand in a way that sound good and make for a good blog, but when you look at them and fact check them a bit, they don't really hold up. Mm.
Let's get deeper into that with another voice here from Chicago, Dolly Yang, professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He is author of Remaking the Chinese Leviathan, Market Transition and the Politics of Governance in China. Dolly, nice to have you with us.
Good to have to be on.
Well, tell us what you heard in this blogger's message, in his messages that he continues to write over there in China.
He especially actually was famous for a number of concepts. For example, he was trying to dissect whether the United States has a cultural cold war against China. He also wrote a very famous blog entitled Your China, Your Party. And this is this mixture, the fact that he's patriotic but also critical of the United States, that really won him a lot of following on the Weibo in particular. And of course, that's also what, as Ian has mentioned, attracted attention of the party leadership.
You say the Weibo, what is that?
Which is actually very much like a Facebook, Twitter kind of interactive platform for Chinese users.
So, Ian Johnson, the ensuing crush of media attention may have been more than this blogger or the president himself may have bargained for. Tell us what the reaction was in China and really throughout the world.
Well, there was a lot of criticism of this guy. I mean, he's one of the things about China's social media is that it is a free-for-all. It's not always the highest standards of debate, but it is quite vibrant. A number of people came out and attacked him and said a lot of what he'd written was rubbish. One prominent sort of debunking blogger named Fang Zhouzi, he went through many of his key points and said that a lot of what Zhou had written was not very good, and this got Fang's blog banned by the government. And you had other people who were writing criticizing him as well. So it hasn't gone down uniformly well, because I think he is quite a controversial person who takes a pretty strong stand.
Dolly, this blogger, Zhou Xiaoping, has never visited the U.S., as I understand. Tell us how old he is, how many followers he has.
Well, I think he's in his 20s still, and on the Weibo, for example, he had at least half a million followers. It's probably even more today. My sense is actually part of the reason the party really eat crow in this particular case, I think, is because of the background checks. Many people felt that Zhou, despite his message, his past actually was much more of on the seamy side of society, that he was involved in various websites related to, for example, even pornography potentially. So there are people who are trying to dig up his past that mattered. And the contrast is this particular conference that President Xi Jinping convened was to commemorate the 72nd anniversary of the Yan'an talks, of Mao Zedong's talks on art and literature, which actually pointed to how art and literature must serve the cause of the Communist Party. So in that sense, actually, there is a little disjuncture that the critics of Zhou basically emphasized how he's much more of an opportunistic guy who is selling a particular message for the party and to the party. And in that sense, they began to debunk him.
Since China's general secretary took over as Communist Party leader in the late 2012, I believe, Chinese officials have been pushing for more, quote unquote, positive energy on the Internet. And I'm curious, with this blogger and all the attention that has ensued, are we in a new era here? Is it Chinese government officials' hopes that bloggers such as Zhou Xiaoping are more effective conduits to transmit the party line than, say, traditional propaganda has been? Ian Johnson?
Yeah, I think they want to definitely draw those people in. There's been a stronger campaign against social media to rein it in a bit. As Dolly mentioned, Weibo, which is this Twitter-like social media, the big commentators, they were called the Big Vs, they were... many of them were closed down, the people who were too critical. The government has been much more assertive. I think this administration, since Xi Jinping took over about 2 years ago, has been much more assertive on a range of issues, especially having to do with dissent and the media. The media climate is a bit tougher here in terms of censorship than it's been in years past. So I do think they want to get the word out and guide things in a much more vigorous and assertive way than the previous administration.
Dolly Young, you said that the Communist Party ate crow on this a little bit. Have they acknowledged that this very influential blogger who's turning a lot of heads in China and beyond has made significant mistakes about America, about American culture, about relationships?
Well, first of all, to back up Ian's line and emphasis, the party's attempt to turn to bloggers like actually Mr. Zhou is because they feel a sense of crisis that the traditional media, their control of TV, their control of the documentary system is slipping, that many people, young people in particular, are turning online or are turning to alternative sources of information. So in this context, they try to gain some traction over the social media. But of course, after the Zhou Xiaoping meeting happened, because of the online criticism, the party apparatus felt very embarrassed by the criticism and began to actually censor the critics. In fact, Mr. Fang Zhouzi, who Ian has mentioned, was extremely popular, debunking all sorts of people, from officials to scholars to others who had made mistakes. And he had multiple platforms in which to blog, and instead he was entirely censored. Overnight he disappeared.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the Chinese government's efforts to shape public opinion and its embrace of a Chinese blogger known for his anti-American essays. We're speaking with Ian Johnson, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent and author of Wild Grass, Three Stories of Change in Modern China, and with Dolly Yang, professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He is author of Remaking the Chinese Leviathan, Market Transition, and the Politics of Governance in China. Let me ask you both about social media in China. How popular is it? Dolly Yang?
Well, it is extraordinarily popular. China Mobile, which is the largest cell phone company today in China, has about 800 million users. Increasingly, ordinary people are switching to smartphones and so on. And therefore, increasingly, people are getting information from online, and especially including from social media.
And so who is on social media? Is it mostly the younger generation then, Dolly?
I think generally speaking, it's the younger generation. And of course, as we look at the people who, for example, we have a survey data suggesting who don't watch TV anymore. And of course, as is typically the case across the countries, it's the younger people who are tuning away from TV and instead turning to video on demand and, of course, social media.
And so, and so what freedoms then do they have online? Is it anything you want, whenever you want, whatever you want to say? What freedoms do they have or do they not have?
Well, there is some censorship, but over time as well, there's incredible competition among the major platforms. For example, Soho, which is a leading portal, began to import episodes, in fact, to show shows such as House of Cards and so on, and attracted a lot of audience, and of course also to its platforms for chatting and so on. And of course, China developed Weibo. And of course, there is also a company called Tencent that has actually a WeChat program, which is not only used in China, but globally. So there is incredible competition. As a result, even though there is some censorship, users have a lot of choices, can access all sorts of information. Some of the information are censored only after the fact. So there, it provides a kind of excitement about accessing some of the information that may not be available after a while. So as a result, actually, there's a lot of discussion of sensitive topics and so on, also sort of in real time.
Sensitive topics such as?
for example, issues of censorship itself, but also criticisms of the government, of party, and specifically economic policies. For example, housing prices, especially high property prices, are a big issue. People are speculating, discussing issues related to what extent there might be a housing crash in parts of the country. And of course, there's a huge amount of discussion. Economists and others are involved. There are also issues related to corruption. Of course, as you know, there has been a corruption campaign, anti-corruption crackdown at this very moment. Of course, major officials have been taken down. A lot of this information gets circulated online before even the formal cases were announced. Mm.
Ian Johnson, we know the Chinese government has had tight controls over the press historically. Dolly mentioned some censorship on social media. What is your perspective? How successful has the government been in that arena?
Well, the government has been able to prevent certain topics. I mean, they have automated the software that cuts out certain words like the Tiananmen Square protests from 1989 or Falun Gong and certain things like that. But Dali is right that there is a large, vibrant discussion on social media in China. I think the problem that a lot of people have is that it's kind of like the social media discussions in the United States, and that if you look at the comments section, say, under articles in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, it's often very vitriolic, it's name-calling, it's not the highest level of debate. And in China also, it degenerates very quickly into name-calling and ad hominem attacks. And yet there's the problem in China is that there's nothing else to leaven that. There's no reputable journals or publications. So the problem, I think, in China is that the national debate is, if there as such as it exists in China, is dominated by this sort of immature and somewhat nasty sometimes social media.
Mm. We continue to hear reports of mobile phone networks being disrupted and concerns over surveillance growing. You mentioned a little bit of that, Ian. Dolly Yang, how can the Communist Party possibly control this growing generation, these young people, and the online activity of more than a billion people?
They can't. In fact, whatever censorship happens is usually after the fact, usually to respond to a certain particular issue. And generally, also sort of selective, because if they really try to fully control everything, of course, they shut down the channels of information, and that would be very hurtful to the Chinese economy as well. But at the same time, there is another function. The social media in particular and online scene is also useful for the leadership to allow for the airing of certain perspectives, certain views, to vent a little bit. I think Ian is absolutely correct. Some of the attacks online are nasty. But at the same time, I also see a very healthy debate and actually discussion of very significant issues. For example, there is a very lively discussion and on-time monitoring of environmental pollution issues by activists who are very interested in dealing with environmental degradation and so on. So in that sense, actually, there is a very healthy element to the online scene in China. And those discussions online, in fact, very often are combined with official encouragement so that actually they can very often, in fact, today they work with even with local governments to say, oh, this particular factory is emitting too much at this very moment. Of course, the local regulators would actually need to respond not only in action, but also online.
So, Ian Johnson, here's this large, vibrant community online, a lot of young people. Circle us back to the issue of this very influential blogger that we started out the hour with here. What's the impact then, with that as a backdrop, of his anti-Americanism on this rising generation?
Well, I think he taps into a deep well of feeling misunderstood by the world. I think a lot of Chinese do feel that the world doesn't quite get their country. They feel that the West is overly critical, that China is portrayed uniformly almost as a police state, or at least that's how they feel it's portrayed. And this goes back years. I mean, you can remember back to the Olympics, the anti-CNN movement, when there were supposed biases in CNN's coverage of the torch relay as it went through France in the run-up to the Olympics. A lot of people feel that, you know, that was a high point, for example, for China, the holding the Olympics, and yet the West was interested in just portraying the negative sides of China. And I feel I get that a lot when I'm in China talking to people, that there's this feeling that we're not really understood. And I think a guy like Joe, he taps into that.
Let me bring another voice in now from Shanghai. Kang Lu is professor of Chinese studies in the Department of Asian and Middle Eastern Studies at Duke University, where he is also director of the China Research Center. He is author of Globalization and Cultural Trends in China. Mr. Lu, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You've heard this discussion here. I understand that you actually ran into this influential Chinese blogger very recently, at a meeting, actually just yesterday. You spoke to him. Tell us about that. What was your sense of him?
Yeah, I was very surprised that I just got a call from NPR that, you know, there's a sort of like a program talking about censorship and the internet discussions and related to this guy, Zhou Xiaoping, the internet blogger. I have to confess that I have never heard about his meeting with President Xi and so on. But to my big surprise, I just saw him yesterday at a meeting in Beijing. The meeting was talking about how to promote, how to share the view about China's the decision of the fourth plenum of the CPC, the Chinese Communist Party, to promote rule of law, you know, how to tell the world how the rule of law is being promoted and conducted in China. And it's just by accident, you know, he's just there.
Do you understand then, you're there, you're in Shanghai, I mean, do you understand why people in China, why Beijing is trying to focus on, let's say, U.S. weaknesses or the downside of U.S. economy or U.S. culture to promote their own message?
I don't really think there's a strong correlation between this anti-Americanism and, this national pride or nationalism. You may want to say that, President Xi Jinping want to promote the more positive energy in this online community. But doesn't really mean that, I don't really see any sign that President Xi is embracing or endorsing this anti-Americanism. This guy, let me just share what I've heard from him yesterday at the meeting. And he said what he wants to do is to act as a sort of online public opinion leader. And he's quite critical of the trend or the so-called online public opinion leaders in China's internet. He said basically most of the internet public opinion leaders are kind of negative and critical of China. He wants to, what he says, quoting President Xi, is to instill a kind of a more positive energy, more positive views about the achievements of the party.
Ian Johnson, do you agree with that? No correlation between nationalism and anti-Americanism in China?
Well, I think there has been, over the past few years, rise in official circles, and in there has been a more rising anti-Americanism. I think you do sense it a bit more. The media is quite critical of the United States all the time. I mean, official media right now is saying that the Occupy Central movement in Hong Kong was part of a plot by the CIA, and these sort of allegations are put out there without any rebuttal. And fairly nonsensical charges like that get circulated in the media all the time in China. I think there is a correlation. I think Joe, he is part of that as well.
Let's get a caller in here. Troy, Alabama. Troy, let's see. Travis is in Troy, Alabama. Excuse me. Travis, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, James.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to say maybe from the ground level, I live in a university town, and there's just tons of Chinese kids here, and they're all, you know, 6'2" Mandarins. They're the ruling class, and I think they're enjoying living the American style and breathing fresh air, and you know, they're going to come back. And I think that just China feels like they're our little brother. They're the only other superpower. And it's just old liners trying to control the message, getting nervous. And, you know, this private property and money experiment is not that old for them. So I think that's all that is. And they're just reacting in the only old way they know how.
Mm. Travis, thank you. Dolly Young, do you see it as the clock ticking? Is it only a matter of time before this rising generation, these young people, just sort of take over?
Well, in all countries, there is that sentiment. But of course, the Chinese Communist Party has adapted over time. They have had major crises in the past. But each time, in fact, over the last 50 years or so in particular, they rose from the, in some cases, actually really rose from the ashes, adapted to a new era. And today, in fact, under the leadership of President Xi Jinping, for example, the Communist Party is resorting in to all sorts of reforms and so on, again, to try to sustain the rule of the Communist Party. So I don't think actually it's going to be as easy. Of course, we can easily project a teleological kind of a future in which the young would transform China. They would. But of course, they would have to contend with the Communist Party that's also very much bent on continuing leadership of the country.
Mm. Here's Don in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Don. Glad you called. Welcome.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a point. Seeing as though the blogger is in his 20s, I just believe that there is a certain degree of truth in what he's saying, you know, for such a young population to believe that. There's got to be a certain degree of truth to what he's saying. As an American, I'm not happy about that. These are three things, you know, uneducated, corrupt, and selfish. These are three things that, personally, I don't like about our country. But again, there is a certain degree of truth there. As far as class goes, I don't think that it was nice for the general to commend his blog and his behavior. You know, Justin Bieber gets criticized and he kicks a ball in the Vatican. You know, we have class as a nation. You know, we don't commend you know, criticisms of other countries like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, I hate to say it, but there's a certain degree of truth to what the blogger is saying, unfortunately, and these are changes that I would like to see.
Don, thank you very much. Ian Johnson, would you respond, please?
Well, I think there's some truth to what the blogger says in that I live in Beijing, and when I get visitors coming here from the United States or other countries, Westerners, a lot of them are surprised that China is such a vibrant, freewheeling place. They often come here expecting it to be a police state or something. And I think that is somewhat due to our coverage in the media, that we do tend to focus on bad news, you know, the old adage that good news is no news. And I can sort of understand that when you're looking at the Western media coverage of China, that it is pretty bleak a lot of the time, and that this would cause you to say, hey, my country isn't that bad. There are some good things going on here, too. Why doesn't the media cover that? So, you know, in that sense, I can understand where Zhou Xiaoping is coming from. I just think that it's put forward in such an unnuanced way that it's almost as demonizing of the West as the Western media might be of China.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about General Secretary Xi Jinping's endorsement of a blogger, a very popular blogger in China, known for his nationalism and his rants against the United States. We're speaking this hour with Ian Johnson, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent in Beijing, and with Dolly Yang, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, and from Shanghai, Kang Lu, professor of political science at Duke University. I'm curious if Chinese nationalism, broadly speaking, is the new value system in China. Ian Johnson, I know you're writing an entire book on this. Is the ground shifting when it comes to this?
I think the government is trying to promote traditional Chinese values. And this is one of the things that Xi Jinping has really done over the past couple of years. He's been pushing traditional Chinese religions. He's been pushing traditional Chinese value systems. It didn't just start with him, but it's really ramped up under him. I think that's really noticeable.
Dolly Young, how do you see it?
Certainly there is an effort to invoke traditional values as well as patriotic values. Of course, every country has to generally have to try to bring the country together very often through the promotion of patriotic values. In our case, of course, we do have July 4th and all the associated activities beginning practically from kindergarten to help our kids understand our history. In the Chinese case, however, the history is much more tortured. And as a result, also, is actually also more complicated because the Communist Party itself used to be very much against the traditional values. Today, however, is also trying to make use of those values to bolster its own authority. And that actually provokes criticism, but at the same time is also very interesting to see how it's being played out across the different social strata.
Hmm. Kang Lu, how do you see it playing across the different social strata? You're professor of Chinese studies at Duke. There you are in Shanghai. Do you see that playing out differently? And is Chinese nationalism the new value system in China, or at least trying to be?
I agree with Dali and Ian completely that there's a certain kind of oddity and disparity between the way that the Chinese Communist Party is promoting traditional values and trying to recreate the kind of value systems that in the ideological vacuum that left out by the aftermath of the Cultural Revolution and all those years of reform. In the sense that for so many decades, Chinese Communist Party is a very anti-traditional and very radical revolutionary, Marxism, Leninism, and all that. But now it's trying to going back to revitalize the traditional value, and the leadership is also aware that this may not really play into the minds of different groups of Chinese. For example, the internet generation this internet blogger Zhou Xiaoping is addressing directly as a generation of skepticism and nihilism. They don't really necessarily have any view of the traditional value at all. So, that's somehow the dilemma that the leadership is facing.
Mm. A lot of response for us online from listeners on Twitter. Zach says, some of the criticisms of the blogger like selfishness are nothing we Americans haven't said about ourselves, but we are free. Bobby says, this Chinese blogger using the same techniques the right-wing media uses in this country, very light on facts, heavy on nationalism. Bobby sees some similarities there. Let's go to Davian in Nashville, Texas. Hi, Davian. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, Jane, I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm based actually in Nashville, Tennessee, and with business, I travel frequently to China. And I agree with your guest, because what I found, being a black American, when I first got to China, there was a little bit of hesitation there and a little bit of apprehension. But what I found when I got there was that the people, once they were presented with a real-life person, a black person, and not a caricature that they'd been presented with on television and in the media, was a welcoming, was a sense of just humanity there, which was very surprising and refreshing. And what I see, the people who I do business with, a lot of them are younger, and they love this Zhou Xiaoping character. And
the blogger,
What they see is basically what I get the feeling for is just that, hey, we would like respect on the national stage. We would like to be represented not as caricatures or as cartoon characters, but as real life people who are living, thinking, breathing, wanting the same things that other people want. I think that, like what one of the other callers said, there are a lot of truths that he hits home with, because what I get the sense of is when we have a kind of a banter and a back and forth is that, yes, what we used to chase with the so-called American dream, the pendulum has swung too far in America. Now look what it has brought to you. And there's just some different things and different social aspects that I know we don't have time to go into that they're looking at to show that, hey, look, if we let the pendulum swing too far, then this is what you get. And that's what someone said. We're back to traditional values.
A lot of people think he has hit a nerve. Davian, I hear what you're saying. Thank you so much for your call from Nashville. Here's Pete in Grinnell, Iowa. Hi, Pete. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a quick point to make. My thought on this is that we have the freedom of speech in our country, but I think that we abuse that freedom of speech, and we allow so much negative online content to just flow freely. I don't really have a problem so much with the Chinese culture steeped in tradition and honor, wanting to protect their people from so much of the negative aspects of the internet that America really has brought to the table. I don't think that censorship is the right answer, but perhaps moving forward, there could be open talks that maybe we could look at the moral values of the globe and try to make those more equal across the board and let people understand that everybody hates things about other countries that they see in the media portrayed as negative because they're fed it all day long by the news. We are told that the Chinese hack into our computers, steal our money. You know, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But you know what? Is the entire country of China responsible? No, it's only a small group of people perhaps that do. I don't dislike the Chinese because a small group of people do it. We've got mobsters and hackers in America to do the same thing.
All right, Pete, thank you. Thank you very much for your call. Let's get one more in here. Todd is in Montreal, Canada. Hi, Todd. Glad you called. Welcome.
Yes, hi, Jane. Great show. I wanted to say that it's interesting that this anti-Western, anti-U.S. Response coming from the blogger sort of just comes after what's happening in Hong Kong and the dissent going on there. And I don't want to sound like an apologist for the authoritarian regime in China, but I think China is responding to a lot of flack that they're getting from the West and in particular to the U.S. And if you broaden this, it sort of echoes what's going on in an ally of China, which is Russia. There's also resurgence of nationalism and pride, and there's a lot of anti-Western, anti-U.S. rhetoric coming out of Russia as well on a kind of a popular level. So I think it's just a reaction to a lot of underlying tensions, global tensions between China and Russia and the West and the U.S. globally.
What an interesting point, Todd. Thank you very much. Dolly Young, would you speak to that, please?
I think, yeah, there is certain parallel, but at the same time, the relationship between China and the United States, especially at the people-to-people level, are much, much stronger. We have actually currently around 240,000 Chinese students studying in the United States. Trade is growing rapidly between the two sides. American exports are growing rapidly to China at this point. So in that sense, actually, there is some worry on the part of the Chinese leadership that young people and the people in general in China perhaps look up to the United States too much. Because even there is some cynicism, in fact, that even the officials who criticize the U.S. send their children to the United States. So that's the irony with China at this moment, in the sense that the party wants to maintain its orthodoxy, but increasingly the young people, and in fact many families, think that the U.S. is where their children should be studying at and hopefully living.
Kang Lu, do you agree with that?
Yes, I completely agree. I would want to add that, there's no need to simply magnify the anti-American sentiment, expressed in some parts of Chinese society, like the blogger Zhou Xiaoping. I want to go back to him. Is not entirely anti-American. His popularity is based on what a lot of people in China and elsewhere called adding this so-called positive energy, to the achievements of the party and the states, the anti-Americanism is only a tiny little part of his rhetoric. On the defensive, I agree with the previous caller from Canada, somehow as a response, as a reaction, or a kind of a rough reaction to the kind of criticism that China has drawn over recent years.
Ian Johnson, let me ask a very practical question. China recently announced less than robust growth economically, 7.3% year-on-year GDP growth, the lowest in 5 years. What happens to your mind if China's growth slows down more significantly? How will that affect the strength of the Communist Party that, and the Chinese view, frankly, of America?
Well, the government wants, to some degree, for the economy to slow down a bit because they know they can't sustain this double-digit growth and that they need quality growth and not just high numbers. And they want to be innovating and not just making things for other people and all that. And so that's part of the game plan. But if it slows down too much, of course, you have a large number of people entering the labor force every year, and the government has to take that into account. And so if you want to think of it also like that, you could say that this is a typical authoritarian playbook. And somebody, one of the callers mentioned Putin, and although I agree that there are significant huge differences between Russia and China, but this is something we've seen elsewhere. I mean, just the way Putin also cloaks himself in the Orthodox Russian Church, to some degree, Xi Jinping is trying to cloak himself in the rhetoric of Confucian values and so on, and also in this case, draw on the internet as a way to legitimize rule, because rule in the past was, we're communist, we have communist values, and that didn't work. After Mao Zedong died, and then you had the Deng Xiaoping era, which has kind of run out of steam, and that was sort of, we're all going to get rich really quickly together, and now that's slowing down, so you have to find something else to hold the country together, some sort of a glue. And as Dali pointed out, every country has that. Every country has its myths, its stories, its history that it tells, the things it tells each other, George Washington cutting down a cherry tree and stuff like that. But here you're seeing a very top-down effort to create this in an artificial kind of way. And I think the thing to look for is the government in China is always trying to do stuff like that. But what really counts is what happens at the grassroots and how do people react to that? How do they buy it? And I travel around China a lot. And, you know, in terms of the anti-Americanism, I don't feel that there's rampant anti-Americanism. People aren't spitting at me or something like that. But clearly it is something, you know, you sometimes get people who are asking you pretty pointed questions about American policy and why are you trying to contain China and things like that, and thing, which I don't, you know, necessarily agree the United States is trying to do, but you get those kind of questions. And I think in a way that maybe you didn't quite get 10 or 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that is kind of rising, and I think it's something to keep an eye on. But I think it's still premature. I don't think we really quite know the answer, how it's all going to play out yet.
Here's Gary in Beloit, Ohio. Hi, Gary. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Briefly here, I'll just make a couple of quick points. I've been married to a Chinese woman from Guangzhou for 10 years, and I've lived in China, and her family has treated me like a son, and the culture is what I love over there. They take care of their elders, but what bothers me is Zhou Xiaoping anti-American rhetoric. I mean, it's the same here in America against the Chinese, and I've actually chosen to lose friends if they say anything derogatory about China, because they've never been there. And I was just wondering if Zhou Xiaoping has ever been here before.
Gary, thank you. Dali? I don't think so. Dali Young, could you answer that?
He has not.
Yeah. Gary, thanks so much for the call. Just a couple minutes left here. Such an interesting conversation. I'd like to ask the panel how you all see the internet and online bloggers like Zhou Xiaoping impacting China in the years to come and specifically impacting the relationship with the United States. Kang Lu, quickly, you're first.
The impact of the internet in China, I think we should not really too much emphasize on that, because after all, the internet is a kind of premature and sort of rough places for the young. If you think about the internet, the majority of the internet users in China are between the age of 14 to 35.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's disproportionate to the Chinese population. Mm.
Dali Yang, do you agree with that? Last word from you.
I think actually it's the young who will actually assume responsibility for the country. The fact that they have exposure to much more diverse views and information would actually make this generation very different from the previous generations in China, and that will shape the character, the tone of the of China in the future. I do want to mention, however, that Mr. Zhou Xiaoping was only one of 72 people invited to that conference. So for the authorities, the internet is just a small part of the elite.
Ian Johnson, 10 seconds. You get the final say.
I think the internet will play a big role in China, but I think we have to look at how it really plays out, and we need to get out of Beijing and sometimes just turn off the internet and talk to people out in the provinces and see where the rubber meets the road and what people are really thinking. And I think that's what's really going to count.
Ian Johnson, thank you so much for your time today. Kang Lu joining us from Shanghai and Dali Yang from Chicago. Really an interesting, fascinating discussion. Thank you very much for your time. You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.